Steve, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If this is new to you, if the story in Virginia is new to you, we will keep you posted throughout the day, certainly. As Steve pointed out, President Trump is scheduled to speak right around 10:30. We will carry that press conference live. So, Steve, if you wouldn't mind, let's just quickly go over what we do know, because there's been nothing but speculation all morning long. There was a softball practice.
Baseball, I think.
Yeah.
Every summer, the congressional baseball team, they have a game where the Nationals play. Mm-hmm. It was to be tomorrow night, Democrats versus Republicans. And it's one of these sort of, you know, you are at odds, at loggerheads all year round. This is one of those events where everyone comes together and plays baseball. And they were practicing. They had a practice this morning in Alexandria, Virginia. And apparently, during this practice, a man with what's described as a rifle, and I mean, some witnesses there say they heard dozens of shots, open fire on the people on the baseball field. One of them shot was one of the highest ranking members of Congress, House Majority Leader Steve Scalise.
Yeah.
He apparently was shot in the second base area, shot in a hip, and then there were others in the dugout. It's not clear exactly. I've heard witnesses say that the shooter was around the third base area or beyond third base. And was shooting, and in all four people shot by the shooter, it looks as if the shooter was shot as well by Scalise's security detail, which is important because Scalise, because of his position, has 24-hour security.
Thankfully.
Had he not been at that practice, there many more people may well have been shot. And there were people like Rand Paul there, Jeff Flake, a senator, members of Congress, Rodney Davis, from downstate. Actually, Rodney Davis, as I say this, it occurs to me, may well be the member of Congress who represents the man who was thought to have undertaken this shooting. ABC and others are reporting that James Hodgkinson lives in Belleville, Illinois, and that is in Davis's district, as I can off the top of my head. The congressman was there. It went on apparently for 10 minutes. There were descriptions of a harrowing scene where Scalise is lying in the outfield, crawling away as he can, obviously shot in the hip. He's not able to walk, crawling away or dragging himself further from the shooting as it was going on. Jeff Flake, the Arizona senator, said he was the first to get to Scalise.
Yeah.
Actually took his phone and called his wife to tell him what was going on, her what was going on.
Yeah.
And another member of Congress used his belt to tourniquet a victim. There's been reporting that among the shooting victims is a member of Scalise's detail who may well have been shot and then continued on to eventually inflict the wound on the shooter. That's not been confirmed. The police and the FBI had a briefing about 30 minutes ago. I was listening to it, and they really said almost nothing, which is, you know, what they would do at this position.
Sure.
They wouldn't even talk about the
right.
Any identity of the shooter or anything like that. We'll get more of that, but so there's that.
All right, a couple of quick questions. Question number one is, do we know if this was an automatic weapon or not yet? There was talk of it being a rifle, but do we know automatic weapon, or has that not been confirmed?
I don't know anything about that. The FBI leader in the area was asked about what type of weapon. He said he didn't know.
Yeah.
Which I is suspect, but I think they just want to make sure they get everything in line before they start revealing information.
I want to get a question in here, too, before question number two.
Sure.
Were there spectators there, or was this kind of a closed event?
Well, it was a baseball. It was an early morning baseball practice, so I don't know that there would have been. It wasn't like an audience. There might have been people milling around. I don't know. That question hadn't occurred to me, Wendy.
There was a rumor this morning that the shooter was asking people just prior to shooting, are these Republicans? Are they Democrats? Do we know if that's confirmed or not, or is that just something that
the FBI leader and others were asked about that, and they would not.
Nobody would say
speculate on that.
All right.
And they will release more information as they can. Were they all Republicans out there playing?
Well, it was the Republican team.
Okay. Yeah.
So probably.
More than likely. Okay. Horrible, horrible situation out there in Virginia. And I know everyone in the WGN newsroom is working hard to bring in the facts and will throughout the day.
It's just so scary.
Oh, yeah.
You're not safe anywhere.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I know this will sound like I'm being critical of the president, but I will say it anyway. If you visit his Twitter account right now, it's his birthday. And if you visit his Twitter account right now, there's a graphic on there which, depending on what tweet he sends out, has a series of birthday balloons kind of just floating around his tweet.
I don't think he has any control over that. I think that's automatic.
Is that automatic?
If you go to someone on their birthday.
That just happens?
I'm assuming.
It's just a weird juxtaposition as he's tweeting about the sadness of what's going on in Virginia, and you see all these festive balloons all over the message.
Yeah, I don't think he would have done that.
I would
one of the first things I do every day, I'm no kidding, is to check his Twitter feed.
Yeah.
And I saw those balloons.
Yeah.
I sent a text to a friend on her birthday earlier this week, and the balloons were there.
Oh, they're just automatic?
I didn't try to do it. All so right. I suspect that's the case with Twitter, too.
You would just hope there'd be some shutdown valve on something like that because the story is obviously not festive in any way, shape, or form, and the balloons there just kind of distract from the message just quite a bit. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We will discuss this further, and then, as we mentioned, at 10:30, the president is scheduled to speak, and you'll get his thoughts on what went on there in Virginia. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Just so you know, we are keeping very close tabs on what's going on in Virginia. There was a shooting at a baseball field earlier this morning. Everybody in the newsroom is working diligently to get as many facts as out as we can. That'll happen in the news certainly and throughout the day. And then the president himself is scheduled to speak in about 10 to 12 minutes. So we will carry that after it happens, as it happens.
Bill, you brought up Donald J. Trump's Twitter account, and it is his birthday, which I wish I would have known. I would have sent him something.
Oh.
As you click on his page, and it's his homepage, you do see balloons that happens via Twitter. That's not his settings. And then when you go on the individual tweets, you don't see those balloons anymore.
So Twitter automatically is set up.
To celebrate your birthday.
You start an account with them, you mention what your birthday is, and then they have this function that on your birthday, these balloons show up.
I don't recall it happening on my birthday.
Oh,
and now I'm mad. Because Donald J. Trump's latest tweet, Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana, a true friend and patriot, was badly injured but will fully recover. Our thoughts and prayers are with him. Do we know that he'll fully recover? Has that been reported?
It's non-life-threatening, right, Steve?
Shot in the hip, and he is expected to recover.
All right. So that's good news. I just think in a situation like this, there should be some sort of shut-off valve. If it's your account, you should be able to, in a situation like this where you're making a statement that's kind of on the sad side,
I don't think you can do that.
You can't.
I really don't, because even Facebook does that too. When you celebrate an anniversary with a friend, and when it's your birthday, it's just all figured out.
In.
Yeah, it's part of the algorithm or logarithm.
But shouldn't there should be a rhythm method in extreme cases like today?
I agree.
Because honestly, the message is lost. You're reading this message about somebody being shot,
but it's not
there. You're looking at balloons going up in the air.
You don't see it when you're reading the message. It's just when you click on his page, you see balloons, and then you click on the individual tweets.
And then it goes away?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a little bit better.
Yeah, I don't know how you disable that, and that's a very good point.
There should be a way
to opt out of it.
Right. Right.
Although, would he opt out of it? Doesn't he want people to know it's his birthday?
Well, I think small potatoes on a day like today,
right.
But you just wouldn't put your birthday in your profile.
Right, right, right.
I didn't get the balloons. I'm pissed.
It's the same weirdness where on Facebook when somebody tells you something sad has happened, like their dad has died or something, and then you see that people have liked that, and they're not liking the fact that somebody's dad has died. They're just showing some sort of a kinship, but there's like no way to express that.
Yeah.
So
you hold down the like button and you can pick an emoji that says ha ha, one that is crying, one that is love.
But you've seen that, right, where somebody shares some sad news, the test results came back, they have to cut off and then people like the sad news. But they're not liking the sad news, they're just...
Well, they have changed.
They changed it
because
changed
of that. They can react. Yeah.
Okay.
Have you been on Facebook recently?
Not very often. Lately.
I know you posted something about Adam West because
I did.
You don't put much on your Facebook page because you are on my feed. So when you do, it pops up, and I never see any action.
It's been months since I posted something, but I was so sucker punched by the death of Adam West that I did posted something about that. So only important things. Nothing less than important.
I just want to show you that if you hold down the like button,
yeah,
you can choose between happy, sad, ashamed. I don't know what that last one is. Sunburned. So you don't have to necessarily.
The guy looks sunburned.
Embarrassed, maybe.
Is it embarrassed?
But there's one where a little emoji sheds a tear.
I'm sorry to hear about your uncle. I am sunburned. I don't know if that gets the message across. Maybe it does.
I just put a sad face on a joke from Jeff Hoover, so I hope he doesn't take offense to that. I'll change
it. He will. All right. That's fine.
From WGN TV Morning News.
That's fine. So other than the shooting, everything is okay, I hope?
Mrs. Lincoln?
Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you enjoy the show? Mr. Sessions, did you enjoy the show?
I got to tell you, I really, you know, I have my phone set up to give me AP alerts, which a lot of people do these days.
Yeah.
And granted, I shouldn't sleep with my phone near me, but I hear it. And the reason I hear it is because the volume's up for my alarm in the morning.
So does it just buzz all night? Like, it's next to you. Does it just keep buzzing all night anytime there's a story of any consequence? Does it just buzz?
If an alert comes over, yeah. And it just buzzes because I do have the volume down. But, you know, now I hear that phantom zzz, zzz.
I would sleep in fear every night. Like, every time I went off, I'd go, uh-oh. Is this the end of days?
But that's what I mean when I hear it, or even when if I don't hear it and I wake up and I see that there's some alerts on my phone, I'm kind of always scared to look at them because it's like, what now?
I would be too.
Now, like a baseball practice and there's a shooting that goes on there.
Right.
And the guys from Illinois, come on, we don't need a spotlight on us anymore.
Right. Steve, there's no reason to believe that he traveled from Illinois just to do this, right? Was he currently living?
For 2 months, you said, right?
Yeah, the guidance was that he's been there, according to his wife, for a couple of months.
Okay.
I don't know if he was looking for work, but it doesn't look as if he was working there.
And were they separated? I didn't hear what you said.
I don't have that information, just that he had been living in Alexandria for a couple of months and was expected to return to Illinois in the coming days.
You know what's interesting? Anytime something unfortunate like this happens, and you know, believe me, this could have been a lot worse. As of now, nobody has lost their life, but this could have been a lot worse. But anytime this happens, there is this this propensity to find out as much information as we possibly can about the person who did it. And certainly you want to know the reason why. There's no question about that. You want to know what the motive was for something like this. But there's really, hear me out on this, there's little to nothing you can do with that information. You can draw up a profile of people that are more apt to do this sort of thing, but it really doesn't help prevent any future incidents like this.
Yeah, even if he confesses and says why he did it,
right,
how will we help prevent that in the future?
It doesn't. It just doesn't.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose that's true. You know, I'm going to have on the business lunch today, it's not really related, but in a way, Harvard Business Review just did a study of people, and we now are more likely to buy from stores that we think agree with us politically.
Really?
Or we're more inclined, we would actually work for someone who agrees with us politically. We would work for less money than we would for someone with whom we disagree.
I believe that. I could see that.
So there is this sort of growing divide, or our politics now has become part of our social life,
right?
And you know, I don't know if it will turn out that this is part of that, but there's reason there. Let me ask the two of you.
Sure.
When you heard about this, how long into it did you think maybe this is terrorism?
I did not think it for 1 second. Honestly, I didn't.
Bill,
I didn't because my wife woke me up with the news and kind of gave me the facts as we knew them at the moment, and terrorism wasn't part of it. But I'm sure as it was happening, that was everybody's first thought.
That's my point. I don't know if it was because
no,
I
was too
surprised.
Small scale, in my opinion,
really?
To be terrorism. I know that's terrible, but being honest.
You know, I'll disagree with you because there are individual attacks on buses or trains,
sure,
and here were members of Congress being shot at. But I didn't have, that was not my immediate reaction either. And it took a long time. Like, wow, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I consider that
Why
earlier?
Do you think you didn't?
I think because we have so many crackpot shootings.
Yeah.
I don't really know, but I was kind of surprised. I surprised myself by not considering that right away.
I agree with you on that because usually I'm an alarmist and I panic.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't think that. And when I say small scale, quite honestly, on a bus or a train, that's more public than this was. This was a private affair, and I thought it was.
This was an attack on members of Congress, among the highest ranking. There were more than 20 members of Congress there.
Right.
A gunman opened fire on 20 members of the U.S. Congress this morning.
But it's not like he went.
But stop and think of that. A gunman opened fire on 20 members of the U.S. Congress this morning.
But Steve, as huge as that is, you breathe a sigh of relief when you realize it doesn't appear to have any kind of connection to terrorism, because then you go, okay, so this is one step in a much bigger plan that they have, you know?
But would someone need to know? Like, I wouldn't recognize many Congress people if they were out on a baseball field. I would think here's a bunch of...
He didn't open fire on them because they were part of the Chamber of Commerce. I would guarantee.
But I mean, I'm saying he might have hit, you know, it seems like he had some knowledge that they would be practicing this morning.
But that's what makes the, and again, this is still kind of legend. We don't know for sure that this was said, but the legend today is that he said, are these Republicans or Democrats? Which really says, how well thought out was this?
Was this, you know, highly advertised that these members of Congress would be doing a practice?
I think they practice there most days. They have been recently.
I didn't even know they had a baseball team.
Not a team. I mean, they, as Steve said, play this one time. Yeah, they do this one-time event game, so...
All right. Well, we will keep you posted on everything. President Donald J. Trump, the birthday boy, is scheduled to speak at 10:30. So let's take a quick break. Let's catch up on things. It's Bill. It's Wendy at 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. I've been looking at this guy's Facebook page.
James Hodgkinson's.
James
Facebook.
T. Yes.
James T. Hodgkinson.
Big Bernie Sanders supporter.
Yeah, when you go to his Facebook page, that's the first thing you see is he's using that as kind of his... His cover photo is a picture of Bernie Sanders, who must be thrilled to learn this.
I know. Really despised Donald J. Trump, wanted him out of the office.
Yeah.
Someone has texted us because Steve brought up a pretty interesting fact this morning. He didn't think of terrorism as this news was breaking, nor did I. And somebody says the fact that this shooting wasn't an act of terrorism does not bring me relief. Actually, it puts me more on edge. What has happened to our civility? Are we going to start shooting those who don't agree with us politically? That's a great question.
All right. So first of all, there's been a debate, and I know the debate will continue, over what does and what does not constitute terrorism. A guy was shooting at people on a softball field, so that's terror.
Is it homegrown terrorism?
Okay, Bill,
is that the difference?
I'll give you that, and you're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. But my point, I think you know.
Yeah, I know. Is it a more organized form of terrorism?
Was this a Muslim extremist sort of thing?
I know.
That's what we think of right away, and you know, and it was interesting to me that wasn't even my 15th thought.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Nor mine.
Yeah.
But it's true. There have been times, and we've brought this up before, that people I did not vote for weren't elected, and you just kind of went about your business and said, that's our president.
So what's in somebody's mind where the sheer ability to reason that out and say, all right, things didn't go the way I wanted them to go, I got to suck it up and hope for the best. What's the trigger in somebody's head who goes, I just can't deal with this. I got to do something about it, something heinous, something awful. And how lucky are we that mechanism isn't in a lot more people?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I don't think it's someone in a right mind who takes to these extremes.
Right.
Although I was thinking about this morning. Donald Trump won. We know that he's president, whatever. I know there's a whole resistance going on of people who say he's not my president. I don't like the guy, but he is my president. He was elected.
Yeah.
But at this point, why doesn't he just... He won. I know he keeps reiterating all that, but, you know, I even understand on the campaign trail you say something about the competition, but he's in office. I expected some niceness, some let's come together, and it's still like a big baby.
Yeah.
That's what gets people so angry. And then this Jeff Sessions thing, Steve, I suppose you will probably know the answer to this. Listen to Jeff Sessions yesterday and his testimony, and if you're under oath and you just say, I don't recall or I have no recollection, does that get you off the hook? I mean, can anybody just say that?
You seem to be allowed a couple of passes and just
well, then why wouldn't anybody,
advantage.
Why wouldn't everybody say that when they're testifying somewhere
well,
under
somebody
oath?
Somebody called him, Steve, help me with the name, but somebody called him out on that yesterday and just said.
Yeah, I said he was obstructing,
yeah.
That he wasn't answering the questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, if you don't recall, you don't recall, or you know, it's hard to prove that you do recall.
But at times it seemed to have been yesterday anyway, used conveniently, and I'm sure. I mean, it's not the only time that it happens quite often.
I know, but it was a waste of my time yesterday.
I know. All right, we need to take a quick break. We'll cover these and many other stories. And if you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. We're talking about what happened in Virginia earlier today and other things. Give us a call or a text. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It is us. It's Bill and Wendy. In case you missed it, we learned just a few short moments ago that the shooter from today's horrible incident in Virginia is no longer alive. James T. Hodgkinson lost his life. Eerily, you and I are looking at his Facebook page, and you just pointed out something to me, is that there's nothing on there that would be an absolute red flag that this guy was about to do something as horrible as he did this morning. There's a lot of political rantings, but I'll tell you right now, if you went to my Facebook page or your Facebook page and just looked at the feeds from people that we know, there's things that you
very
go,
similar.
That's somebody I'd watch, is that guy, you know.
And someone said, you know, Wendy, you're a Trump hater. Just admit it. I don't like the guy, but what can I do? I'm not going to resort to violence. He's in the office right now.
Yeah.
I keep hoping things will figure themselves out. And again, I'm hopeful. That's all I can be.
All right.
Larry has a finger to point at someone. Hi, Larry.
Well, I'm not just pointing a finger. I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of people that don't like the outcome of the election, and I'm thinking that the media, you know, and you guys are part of that, but, you know, guys like Colbert and all these talk show personalities that are just beating up everything that has ever, you know, Trump has ever done or is trying to do, and it's all negative, instead of finding something that they could like about what he did. You know, instead of finding...
Could you tell me that one thing?
I think, you know, he appointed... I'm sorry. He appointed the guy for the Supreme Court. I thought that was a great thing.
Gorsuch.
So the point that I'm trying to make to you is, you know, we can't always beat up every little point. And I think in our political history, you know, if you go back into the 60s and 70s, when it was, at the end of the 60s, when, you know, we were coming out against the war and people were marching and doing things, I think we're at a similar point. But we have to, but the difference is, people are hiding behind Facebook and hiding behind, you know, social media, and they don't have to take responsibility for what they are doing. They're now, you know, you're not seeing the type of protesting and stuff like that went on, you know, in Chicago in 68.
That's true. You can now protest behind your keyboard of your computer instead of getting out there and marching. There have been people marching, but that's something I never thought of, Larry.
Yeah, so I just think that, you know, everybody needs to take a step back and understand that, you know, we have to support the officials that are in office until it's time to vote them out. You know, I mean, people have been complaining about the state of Illinois and, you know, how much is not being done there, but they keep putting back the same people, Madigan and Cullerton and the Republicans too. Anybody that's been in office for over 10 years, in my opinion, needs to go, because all they're doing is putting forth an agenda to keep them in power, not to do what's right by the people that they were elected by.
Larry, I agree with nearly everything you said, except for the part that the media had some small role in this. I don't see it that way at all.
And excuse me, can I say two words to you? Rush Limbaugh, for all these years, why is it all of a sudden the media is taking...
It's the same. I agree with you. Sean Hannity,
yep.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yep.
All those guys are idiots.
Yeah.
But they've been able to blast all of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. They've been doing it for years, and how come nobody has come forth and said, oh, the media is biased and it's fake news until now?
I did. I have. I stopped listening to those people, and I stopped listening. You know, I'm trying to I think I'm a moderate Republican, all right?
Yeah.
And so I'm socially accepting. and I'm a conservative Republican, but, okay, you know, from a fiscal standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to get into your business, and you shouldn't get into my business, but we should care about how much money we're paying to the government.
Sure.
Right?
Agreed.
Yeah,
so,
Larry.
You know, that's my point is, you know, we need to just take a step back, and all both sides that are, you know, far right, far left need to come closer to the middle.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate
Thanks, Larry.
It. But really, how come, you know, when Rush Limbaugh was at his peak,
right,
bashing Obama, I mean, we joke about it, but
right,
anything we say, it's like, thanks, Obama, because that's what a whole bunch of people were saying. Why wasn't the media getting criticized then?
And his game was to refer to the media as the mainstream media. So what he was doing, in essence, was saying to people, I'm your alternative to the mainstream media. However, if you looked at what he had achieved, he was on an every he was the epitome of the mainstream media.
Uh-huh.
He's on in every market in every city in America. So he is the mainstream media, pointing fingers, saying that's what they're telling you, the mainstream media. Well,
it ebbs
wrong.
And flows. They were the mainstream media, so-called, before.
Sure.
Now we get a voice. We got to start talking more like this, though.
All right.
I can't do a Rush impersonation.
That's what it takes.
It seems like that's what it takes.
But Larry made some very good points, but I there's not an iota of truth
no.
that the media had any role in this guy.
This guy did his own PR work on his Facebook page. Go look at it.
Yeah, yeah. But we have entered an era in this country where polarization pays,
yeah,
and where, you know, people are making money and about over anger.
Yeah.
Whether it's on either side of it. And, you know, I don't think we're served by it on either end. I mean, you know, we have become much more angry, much more personal in our opposition. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the media's fault. But there are a lot of shows on TV and on radio and publications online that are making a lot of money fostering that stuff.
But isn't it their job, Steve? And you know this, you do this for a living. To be reflective of what the society is. No, we've never seen anything like Donald Trump's rise to power here in the United States.
Well,
it's unparalleled.
Know, I think he was talking about something a little different than, you know, the mainstream straight news sort of media. If he's bringing up Sean
Colbert.
Hannity
he said
or
Colbert,
he said Colbert, which
yeah.
I don't know if it's a great example, but you know, there's great controversy right now with Megyn Kelly.
Right.
Is going to have this InfoWars guy on Sunday,
Alex Jones,
and who is, you know, I mean, arguably a hateful fella.
The yeah. worst.
And but he's got a strong media following. He's got a media site.
Right.
And that's the sort of stuff on the right. That's an example on the right that really sort of fosters this anger.
Yeah,
yeah, but there's been. I'm sorry, Steve. There's been this anger, and there's been this information coming out on the right side forever, and no one called it fake news before. Why all of a sudden is it fake news?
You know, I think. Well, I'm talking about the longer view, like over the last 20 or 30 years,
yeah.
we've
yeah.
been moving toward this. And I think there certainly have been times when someone from the right or the alt-right has performed some sort of violent act and people have been quick to blame the alt-right media or
I guess.
Conservative politicians. I mean, that has happened too. Come on. You know, a lot of times, you know, something with the Tea Party or if someone holds up a racist sign, that means Donald Trump is a racist, or you know, there are accusations on both sides of it.
Is that Tea Party still going on, by the way? Because I'd like some tea.
It's still, yeah.
It's not as strong now, is it?
No, it's not as strong.
I need more caffeine. I'm sticking with coffee.
We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well, what does it say when the voice of reason is David Hochberg?
Oh my God.
It's been a strange day today, and David Hochberg comes in. Really quickly, David, before we talk to you, I don't know if you heard Wendy, but in Steve's news, we got a statement from Bernie Sanders, and I said earlier, it's just got to be so hard if you go to the page of the man
Facebook
who did the
page.
Shooting, yeah, James Hodgkinson, you see a large picture of Bernie Sanders, and it's got to be just awful if you're Bernie in this case, because there's nothing about him that advocates violence. So he quickly just, you know, denounced all this, you know, saying, I'm not looking for any kind of trouble. It's got to just be horrible.
You know, back in the old days when we had radio station T-shirts, sometimes you hoped that somebody who was arrested was wearing like a WGN
oh.
shirt or something,
because
press is press. But at this point in time, you want to get away from that
immediately. Yeah. David Hochberg is here, everybody.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good morning.
To help all of us. Hi. Yes.
And
you,
if you go to David Hochberg's Twitter or Facebook page, you will see balloons because you're celebrating your two-year anniversary with
my
Pearl.
Two-year anniversary, yeah. Ross is anniversary. Got the anniversary balloons up.
That's wonderful.
It's 2 years since I left my old company and been at Pearl for 2 years now. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. It's been
absolutely
a good, great transition, and most of the people are now still have figured it out and are calling me over at Pearl instead of the other company. So thank you for that. And you know,
I'm sure the old company forwards any phone calls they get. I'm positive of that, right?
Right. Yeah, comment. So it's been 2 years at Pearl.
And what is your title? We never have this written down
It's Vice President of Lending at Pearl Mortgage.
That's right.
And run a team of 15 loan officers. And, you know, we're closing about 150 loans a month and just helping people get into loans at the lowest rates and lowest costs possible. And, you know, give them good, solid advice. Here, I had a cop, two cops emailed me Sunday, got right back to them, and they left their phone someplace to call me today. They had their home, $300,000 home paid off, and they needed $85,000 to $100,000 out of their home. And they called me and said, hey, we went to this credit union, the policeman's credit union. They're offering us this for $85,000. And is this a good rate? I'm like, take the deal. It's a great opportunity. Look for this. They wanted to charge him $1,300 in closing costs, which is high. But if he took out $30,000 at the time of the transaction, they waived the closing costs. So I gave the officer some information, some advice to ask the lender that's helping them to make sure that they're getting the best opportunity to solve their problem. And it works out that that's the best thing for them to do. He's a cop. She's a cop. He's also a veteran. So, you know, I like taking care of my first responders and my veterans. So I like to take care of everybody, but especially the first responders and the veterans, you know, have a special place in my heart.
I wish I knew you the very first time we bought a house, because it's a scary thing when you do that. Something we did way back when, which I thought was a rarity, was getting pre-approved for a loan, because that's super important.
Right.
You can find out what price range you're in, what houses to look at, and you do that pre-approval, don't you?
Well, you know, Pearl has gone one step further. We actually give an approval, right? So No, we do the full-blown approval, okay? You could get the pre-approval, and a lot of people like to talk about pre-approvals, and a lot of people like to guarantee pre-approvals, but a pre-approval is when you submit all your information to the loan officer. The loan officer and their staff is looking at the information. And you know what? A loan officer is not an underwriter. A loan officer is a frontline person. It's your front line of defense that is basically saying, hey, you know, you look really, really good, and we're going to, you know, and we're going to guarantee you that you get a loan. Then guess what? Gets to the underwriter who's grading the paper. Okay. It's kind of like a teacher's assistant and the professor, right? So the teacher's assistant is saying, yeah, this looks really good and you've got a great paper. But then the professor looks at it and goes, yeah, your paper sucks and we're not going to, you know, you're going to get a C instead of the A that the TA, the teaching assistant, you know, said you were got. So, you know, thought that your paper would get. Well, I'm the professor, and guess what? You have problems with this paper. So what we do at Pearl is we have a full-blown approval process.
Wow.
Yeah. So we approve your loan. And you don't even need to have a home. You don't even need to have a property. So if you're looking, I was talking to John DeCoste, okay, him and his wife Jackie, who are clients of mine, are looking to buy a home. They had some questions. I'm like, let's just get you approved. So we're going to take all the information down. We're going to put it through an actual underwriter, is going to look at their loan and say, John and Jackie, you qualify to go do this. Boom. Okay.
To buy a house within this range.
To buy a home within this range. Now, if John and Jackie buy the home, we could close within 10 business days, as long as title isn't screwed up, or as long as we get clear title, as long as there's nothing, any physical defects on the property, you know, with the appraisal, as long as John and Jackie, or the client we're using, John and Jackie in this example, as long as the borrower that we approved doesn't go out and jack up their credit or loses their job or anything like that, it's 10 days. So all of this nonsense with, oh, you know, we're guaranteed to get your home, you're not guaranteed to get anything, right? It still has to be underwritten by an underwriter. We have underwriters on my team. I've got six underwriters that will look at your loan and say, you're approved. Forget about this pre-approval nonsense.
Because that may fall through, quite honestly.
Once the underwriter looks at it, right, grades your paper, many doors open up. So no matter how good you are with your pre-approval, all you realtors out there and all you buyers out there listening, you want an approval. So now what we're doing is we're doing approvals. We've got, I think we had a meeting. We had a lunch meeting last night. That would be a dinner
meeting.
We had a lunch meeting with my team. I think we have 44 approvals set up, ready to go, that people are out. Not pre-approvals, approvals. So all people have to do in this environment right now, you talk to any realtor out there, there's 5-6 people bidding on a single house.
Not many houses available.
There's not many houses. No. And especially in the city, if you're looking for a house, if you're looking for a 2-3-4 unit property, what's been happening is, due to the low inventory, a lot of people have been buying these threes and fours mm-hmm. and converting them into single family houses and buying the twos also, the 2-unit buildings. They've been taking it, keeping the shell, getting it retrofitted, sending a contractor in there and just turning it into a single family house. So the inventory for multifamily houses has shrunk tremendously and dramatically in this city and the surrounding suburbs, because it's easier just to convert an existing 2, 3, and 4 unit than knock the doggone thing down and build up.
Getting back to this pre-approval that we talked about just a minute ago, a decade or so ago when we were in such an economic turmoil,
right.
A lot of it's because people were going in and looking at houses that they just flat out couldn't afford. So has that 100% been obliterated?
Yes.
It's all gone.
Yeah, the Wild West days of lending where if you had a pulse or you stick a mirror under your nose and you got fog, you could get a loan and you could buy, all of this pre-approval, 5% down, that people would buy 5 condos, before the building was ever built, and they'd give $1,000 per condo because anybody could get a loan, and then everything went to heck in a handbasket. To get a loan today, it's gotten easier, and we've got it down to a science. It's not that difficult. You just have to give us what the lender wants.
Yeah.
2 years worth of tax returns, every page, every schedule. If you own a business, more than 25% of a business, we need the business tax returns. 2 years worth of W-2s, all applicable W-2s, K-1s, 1099s, covering a 2-year period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Clear copy of 2 months worth of bank statements, every single page. So if the bank statement says 1 of 5 and page 3 has got boilerplate and page 5 is blank and you only send us 1, 2, 3 and 6 and you leave the other two out, the lender doesn't know that there's boilerplate on page 3 and page 5 is blank. They want to see the boilerplate on page 3.
God, it's such a pain getting everything together, too, I got to tell you.
It's really not, because it's all done PDF. Okay,
so that does make a difference.
It makes a lot different. So you need pay stubs, a month's worth of pretty damn fast, right?
Yeah.
PDF, thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
You're an IT. You got a future in the IT field.
Thank
this
you.
Doesn't
I
work
hope
out.
So.
You need a month's worth of pay stubs, clear copies of your ID, bank statements covering 2 months. You need all W-2s, K-1s, 1099s covering 2-year period of time, and 2 years worth of tax returns. That gets
That's
us
it.
Basically down the road moving. Now, if we look at your bank statements and you've got a $45,000 deposit coming in,
right.
We need to source that deposit if we want to use that money in your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
If you give us your tax returns and all of a sudden you've got a couple of different companies going on that you didn't tell us about and there's a major loss, that would impact what's going on.
Sure.
Yeah, a pre-approval might catch it, but an underwriter is definitely going to catch it, because the underwriter is basically going to say, hey, this is basically a loan is approved or it's subject to this, and you've got a loan. Not this pre-approval nonsense crap that I keep hearing about.
Get approved, not pre-approved.
Get approved by me, not pre-approved by anybody
by
else.
By the professor.
David Hochberg, Vice President of Lending at Pearl Mortgage for the last 2 years. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
You can reach him at WGNDavid.com. You can call him when he's off the air at 312-751-1333. You can also call us right now if you have questions, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
David Hochberg's here.
It's a good look on Wendy, though. She can pull it off.
Oh, yeah. Blonde. What are you going to do?
Not too many people can pull
nice.
It off.
It looks very nice. David's
got a hell of a curveball, too.
His 2-year anniversary over at Pearl Mortgage and passing the savings on to you.
Yes.
That's what he likes to do.
That's what I like to do.
There are questions. There's comments at 312-981-7200. People want to know things.
Bring it on, baby. All Let's right. go.
Dan, David, David, Dan.
Hey, Danny.
Hello, everybody. David, all right, quick question. I've got a small business. And I use my I have a first mortgage on my house. The house is worth about $650. I have a HELOC on it as well that I use to manage cash flow for my business.
Okay.
Both my first and second mortgages are in the roughly 200, a little over 200 range.
Okay.
I'm ending the draw period on my HELOC, so I have to refinance it.
Right.
Is that a problem with leaving the first mortgage where it is? Because I don't want to move it because
it's got
a very low interest rate.
Yeah, you could. So what Dan's asking is he wants to know if he could take out another second loan.
Sure.
And not have to touch in the first loan.
Right.
So what's the rate of your first loan, Dan?
It's in the 3.75
range. Okay, 30-year or 15-year?
30 year.
That's a great rate. So there's no reason to touch that loan. So, but there are people out there that will tell Dan and on that, that don't know, oh, you know what? We have to do both. We have to do a $400,000 loan. And that's 100% false. So if anybody tells you that, Dan, don't touch the first loan. You're perfectly fine.
They're separate entities.
It's separate entities. You got a first loan, a second loan. Problem is you took out a second loan 10 years ago because all the banks were giving out second loans like candy through a drive-through, right? It was like a Cialis commercial, you know,
You
know,
sitting under, free bathtub with
it. Yeah, it was like, you know, you know, sit under the oak tree and look how wonderful it is. Take out a home equity line of credit. So, Dan, you took out a home equity line of credit. Yeah, so what I would do is to try to maximize, replace the current line of credit with another line of credit. And I work with a couple ladies over at First Midwest Bank. They're phenomenal, Sarah and Anna.
Just did that.
Yeah, and you just got it done with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seamless, and Steve went over there. Steve Cochran went over there. And I was supposed to get that information to you. Did I ever get that information to you?
No, Bill?
You were busy.
Yeah, I forgot about
that's
you.
That's right.
Yeah, okay, well, you know, only the important
I'll make
people.
Him call you back.
Yeah,
Bill.
Whatever. I'll get you their information. But if you want, Dan, you could send me an email. You could go to WGNDavid.com, and I'll introduce you to Sarah and Anna, and they could help you secure another home equity line of credit. But you do not have to do anything with your first loan.
Okay.
That's good news.
Is there any risk of my current vendor saying, no, if you move your home equity, you've got to do both or nothing?
No. And if they tell you that's a bunch of crap.
Oh, they're both with the same company?
No. And if they tell you that, that's a lie, and you should call me, and then we'll expose them for being crooks because there's no reason – no, they can't make you redo the first loan. That's that. No. So there's no. And if they try to do that, call me back and we'll blast them. All right.
Good luck, Dan.
Thanks for your help.
All right. Good luck. There you go.
All right. An underwriting question from John. John David Hochberg, WGNDavid.com.
Hey, John.
Hello. I'm actually a current client.
Okay.
You mentioned, I want to challenge you on something you said about underwriting. You mentioned that your underwriting is in-house, and that you, rather than pre-approve, you actually approve the loan before you send it to your underwriting department.
No, I didn't say that. I said we could approve the loan prior to you buying a home. That's exactly what I said. It's not what you heard, but that's right. What I said. But go on with your question.
Okay. Well, I was just curious about the underwriting part because, you know, we're self-employed.
Okay.
And I felt like, you know, as we go through the application, I was writing so many letters of explanation for all kinds of deposits into our business account and these sorts of things. And it seems like the underwriting department is somewhere else entirely and not under your...
Well, they are under my team. So that's, again, maybe what I should do is call you off the air, find out exactly what's going on with your loan.
I would love that.
Well, that's fine. So hang on, and we'll get your number, and I'll call you.
Thanks.
Okay, please hold. There you go. Problem solved.
He just wanted to talk to you.
Yeah,
but...
he's putting words in my mouth that I never said, but that's okay. We'll figure out what's going on with John's loan. And, you know, listen, if the underwriter wants to see something because they find something unusual or they have a question about it, it's a golden rule. Those with the gold make the rules.
Right.
And they have to account for deposits. So something looks weird to an underwriter.
And self-employment is a little more difficult.
It's a higher level of difficulty from the Russian drudge, right? You're not just doing a straight dive off the hive board. You're doing a triple back sow cow, all right? And, you know, you could have, I know you're going to come up
with. That was impressive.
That was good, right?
That was excellent.
It's a little more challenging when you have a self-employed individual, because if they have creative accountants that's deducting things and depreciating things.
Yeah.
It gets confusing.
It's not confusing. It's just we need to explain everything
to
what all these things that are going on. Is the is the loss going to continue going forward? Okay, is this a one-time loss? Did you know that large purchase, is that a one-time large purchase? You know, you purchased depreciation. How long is the depreciation going to? You know, there's multiple layers of questions. So I will get into John's specific answer. And the thing is, here's the deal. If the underwriter asks for it, if you want the money, you're going to write and do what the underwriter wants, or they won't give
you
the money.
Or you're not going to get the money.
Right. It's that simple.
I don't know if we got John's number, but how can he reach you?
It's very simple.
Kevin has it, but how do the rest of you?
312-751-1333. 312-751-1333. You can go to WGNDavid.com. Everybody gets a call back. Everybody gets an answer. If you email us and call us, we will respond within 24 hours. You call any time of the day. There's 24 hours, 7 days a week. Somebody's answering the phone.
That is David Hochberg. His wrestling name is the He Loch Ness Monster. You can get them at 312-751-1333.
He's got a great green type thing.
I don't want to know that. WGNDavid.com is his website.
And Vice President of Lending with Pearl Mortgage. Happy 2 years there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, David. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Dr. John Duffy is here with us. Sorry I stuttered on your name while introducing you before. He is a clinical psychologist, a best-selling author of a book called The Available Parent, and he does a podcast called Undo Anxiety, and it's your year anniversary of Undo Anxiety.
It is.
Congratulations. Boy, all these anniversaries.
Yes, yes.
Wow, oh, wow. You can find that.
There's sheet cake in the green room, John.
I'm just loving it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I believe it's a clipboard cake for a psychologist. Yes. Undo Anxiety, you can find it at WGNplus.com and also iTunes and where all your favorite podcasts are found.
Right.
Before we get on to bigger issues, let's talk just a little bit about what happened today. And this is the question I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Something obviously happened that made this guy snap.
Now, right. we were talking about Alexandria, Virginia,
right.
during a Republican practice for a charity baseball game.
Right.
The shooter, do you have his name written down?
Yeah, it's
Hodgkinson.
Yeah, James T. Hodgkinson, no longer with us. He was killed in the melee. All right, so one of our callers said that he put some of the blame on this on media because the media is always scrutinizing what's going on politically. I don't buy into that because I think if that were the case, you'd have countless incidents all over the globe constantly. People would be just shooting at each other because of what they're hearing in the media.
Right.
Do you put any of the blame on media for something like this, John?
No, I don't. I think there is a degree of mental illness and instability that drives somebody to this. I think maybe the availability of so much media. If you think back to the I shot the president for Jodie Foster, right? Now
Hinckley,
right? So now, you know, 30-some years later, you get so much more exposure in a day or two that you can create this sense of infamy. But do I think that's what drove him to do it? Do I think he would have done it otherwise? I do.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah, yeah. I think there was – and I don't even know if he had anything particularly against what was happening on that field. He may have. It may have been somewhat political.
He hated Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He was asking for his impeachment. And that's another thing, you know, when his name was released – and kind of shame on me for doing this, but it's part the news junkie in me. Whenever I hear a name in the news, I automatically go to see if there's a Facebook page.
Sure.
Just to see. And Bill and I were looking at it. Bernie Sanders was a picture that was on his cover page. Bernie Sanders came out and said, you know, this guy volunteered with me. I'm sickened to death that this happened. But you look at his Facebook page, and it's a disgruntled person in this day and age, which is not uncommon.
No.
So it's like nothing really stood out that all of a sudden he would take this terrible turn.
Right. So the question becomes like, okay, so what, and culturally, I think we have to ask, like, what brings somebody to that point where they lack so much resilience that they're willing to do something like this? Because he's not the only guy who dislikes Trump or the Republican Party, you know, right? There's a lot of people
like
that who find different avenues for their, you know, disgruntled feeling, right? But this guy decided to take a life, ruin lives, and, you know, and there's something that brings somebody to that. And that probably has very little to do with politics and more with his own psychological dynamic.
I said to Wendy, you look at my Facebook page, there are 20 feeds right now from people that you say, that's somebody I'd be more concerned about than this guy, than the shooter today. Every one of the rants that I read every day, I worry about those people. And I know that it's an emotional outlet to be able to vent on Facebook. I understand that. But I don't know what's that part of your brain where you go, I got to stop talking about it and do something about it.
Right.
And why are we lucky enough that this isn't happening all over the place every day?
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that most of us are resilient enough that we can manage our own impulses. Right. So the trick becomes, how do I identify those people? And this is an age old trick, you know, in my profession is like, you know, how do we identify those people who are likely to go off and do something awful, you know, because they are in some degree of psychological distress and they reach a tipping point. And it's really, really tricky to do that because there was a time when we thought, oh, well, in the post-Columbine era, we're going to be looking for those guys who are the trench coat mafia, disenfranchised boys.
Right.
And then, you know, 30 years later, we start looking for girls who are bullies online on Snapchat and Instagram. And in this political age, we start looking for people who are disenfranchised politically. And you're right. It's like needle in a haystack because there are thousands, millions, you know, and it's really hard to identify somebody who's really going to make a move in that direction.
And how many times have you seen people that you're like, someday that guy is going to snap, and they never do?
Right.
I mean, the people you may seem look like it aren't always like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you what, you know, just taking a big step back, to me, the key is if you see somebody who is who seems like they're suffering, who seems like they're bullied, who seems like they're alone, even at a young age, you know, because somebody who's about to do something tomorrow, I don't know if we can do anything about that guy. But, you know, if we find somebody when they're 12 or 13 or 14 that's sitting alone in a cafeteria in their middle school and somebody approaches them, you know, a teacher or another student, that might give them, you know, the resilience they need to control their impulses later in life.
But you couldn't prevent with this guy looking at the page that Wendy and I looked at, looking at his Facebook page. There was nothing there that the police or anybody could have done because he was just... He was one of many, many people that are not happy with the way that life is going right now in the United States. But there's nothing there that says he's going to go to a baseball stadium tomorrow, a baseball field, and start shooting at people.
No. And to your point, Bill, the good news is this is fairly rare. Like I think the media might suggest because there's so much media that this happens all the time, this kind of thing. But the truth of the matter is the astonishing part of this story is that this isn't happening daily, right? And it's not. And and that's the good news is that, you know, we can have a little faith in human nature that by and large we're controlling our impulses even if we strongly disagree with what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So really quick.
Yeah.
We had an incident last week where somebody went back to the place they used to work, they were fired from, and there was an incident there. So that one you could almost connect the dots.
Sure.
Okay. In that person's head, this is when my life stopped working properly. It's because of this place. They fired me. But in a case like this, what's a shooter hoping to accomplish? He's not going to change the political climate by going out and shooting people on a baseball field.
Well, a rational mind would say that.
Exactly, yeah. Wendy. Right. So at some point, this man has lost his compass of reason, right?
Yeah.
Because he's probably not going to make any point that's viable that anybody is going to cling onto. He's just decided like to take this to the very, very nth degree, which and what he did is irrational, self-defeating, and it's hurting other people. And in the end, it will hurt whatever cause he stood behind.
Right.
But somewhere along the line, there was enough stress in his life and little enough resilience that he decided to commit this act. Yeah. And I don't know how conscious a decision it even was.
I am anxious to find out. Again, the news hound in me likes to find out all this information. So say we find out that James T. Hodgkinson had some mental issues back years ago, or he was seeing a psychologist or under psychiatric care. Even knowing that now was no way to predict what would have happened today, is there?
No, it really not. I mean, you know, people can seek help and it's the wrong time in their life to get help, or it's the wrong approach to help him, or a misdiagnosis of some kind. But you also can't predict what kind of stressors are going to come into somebody's life going forward. And if they're not prepared for those psychologically, there's this possibility, and it's a slim one, that they'll snap at some point.
Why has this world become so hard to manage? It really has. I mean, just the stress and anxiety of kids at such a young age. I mean, I didn't think that I was stressful or anxious about anything when I was in elementary school. Do you?
No.
I didn't feel like I knew kids that were either.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was going on, but it's so prevalent now.
Yeah, you know, I really think it has something to do, and this comes back to your media point, with the onslaught of information, and not just the fact that there's all this news coming our way, because, you know, we could argue that, you know, there were news junkies 30 years ago and they just happened to watch the evening news. It's more how we take it in and how agitating, you know, all of the media is, all the screens are in our lives,
right,
and all the pressure is. And there's, if you think about how different the world operates than it did when we were kids, I think we would argue, all three of us, that we had relatively stress-free childhoods, barring, you know, the occasional crisis. But kids today, they live in a heightened degree of stress, far more than any of us ever experienced when we were kids.
Yeah,
you know?
That makes sense.
312-981-7200. Dr. John Duffy is here. You can find him at drjohnduffy.com. We'll take a quick break and back with more chat. It's Bill. It's Wendy at 720 WGN.
Dr. John Duffy is here. John, Wendy has this imaginary friend named Tom Jenke. Should I be worried?
Seems like a mild concern.
Yeah,
I keep an eye on it.
I worry for her sometimes.
I was more creative with my imaginative friends, Leah Brandschmidt and her cousin Oreo Lekas.
Sure.
That's what I made up when I was late getting home.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there's some history.
Oreo Lekas.
Yes, those were my excuse friends.
Kudos to your parents for giving that a pass.
They didn't believe me. All right, we're talking about anxiety in young kids today, and I have two teenage boys, which they have a little bit of anxiety here and there. Kathy's got a great question. Kathy, go ahead. Dr. John Duffy's here with us.
Hi there. Is that a question? I was agreeing with everyone. I have 11 grandchildren, ages 18 down to 1.
Congrats.
And right. I need to win the lottery to support them all. But they're all attached to screens all the time. And some of my friends with a lot of grandkids, they have a no screen policy. You put your phone at the door in a basket, and there's no phones or screens when they visit grandma. And I cannot enforce it. I'm too lenient with them. I don't want them to hate me. But it's very, very annoying. And I'll tell you the other thing is the violence that they're desensitized to. And the little ones are in the room when the big ones are watching these movies. And it's just so commonplace and irritating in our society. A movie's not good unless it's got car crashes and big guns and people shooting each other. And I just think that's part of the problem, really and truly.
John?
I think you're onto something there. You know, I think we've upped the ante in almost every area of our kids' lives, right? I think you're exactly right about that. I think social media has really taken over their lives. Violent video games are super commonplace, and we're considering ourselves as parents, sometimes bad parents, for not allowing our kids to have access to these things because this is how kids sometimes connect. And if you add the viciousness sometimes of social media to that and just the draw of it, along with what we all used to deal with when we were kids, academic and regular social pressures, and you've got a real pressure cooker for any kid, for all 18 of your grandkids. So I think you're right about that. I have heard of the basket trick before, and I'm a big fan of it because I've heard that if you exercise that for a while, kids eventually kind of dig into it and look each other in the eye, and they're not looking at their phones while they're hanging around with their friends and end up enjoying it. But starting that is trickier than it sounds. So to your point, yeah. But
we try to turn the TV off and play cards, the old fashioned, you know, card games with grandma.
God, that's so fun.
Again, you want to spend time with them. I mean, I don't want to have a phone between our faces. I just don't like that.
Well, I love your idea of something like cards or, you know, engaging like board games or charades or something. And the presumption a lot of us have is our kids aren't going to really get into that. But from what the stories I hear from my client families is once they're going at it, even if they're complaining the whole time, they get into it once they're there. This is what they want to do. They want, all of us want to connect directly. What kids are doing is they're settling for this indirect connection because this is their stock and trade. This is how they communicate with one another. But to give them some breaks from that sometimes is critical. So I love the idea and I encourage more card games. I think you're onto something.
And if they won't play with you, Kathy, I'll come over and play cards with you.
Oh, fantastic.
Wendy and Tom Jenke will be by the house.
Shut up.
All right, whatever.
All right, you had one final thing.
I know, Tom.
Oh.
See? All right, then I'll bring
it. It's an epidemic.
With.
Now I'm really nervous.
Did you have one more thing?
The other bad thing is Snapchat. 7 of our grandchildren are girls. And
yes.
And they're on that Snapchat all the time. And I think that's so negative and destructive. I don't see anything good about it. And the other third thing is the selfies. These kids are like, they photograph every single thing they do.
That's true.
I just don't understand why they need to do that. I guess it's that being old, and I guess I can admit that. But I don't know. It all comes back to the phones and the media and having connections. And anyway, I love your show. Thank you for letting me be on it. I listen all the time.
Oh, you're
Thanks,
the best.
Kathy.
Thank
Say
you,
hi
Kathy.
To Tom Jenke for us.
Okay, will do. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. My mother-in-law, Annette, every Christmas started playing bingo with the kids.
Uh-huh.
Granted, she wraps up cool little toys and stuff that you can win if you
nice.
Do bingo. But the kids look so forward to it.
Yeah.
The phones are down, and now it's like every time we're going to Grandma's for Christmas, will there be bingo? So I love Kathy's idea of playing cards. That's like a cool thing you could do at Grandma's house.
Absolutely. And anything that takes your kids away from things like Snapchat that's so stressful, I don't disagree with her at all on that point. Is going to be better for our kids than you know than staying on there and increasing their stress level as they
sure.
go without even recognizing it and thinking, if I let go of this, I'm going to miss out on something really, really critical. And the truth is, if you put it down for 2 hours and you play bingo, you haven't missed anything.
Right.
And you've had a good time and your stress level comes way down.
I'm hoping my kids outgrow it. Dylan forgot his phone the other day. It was downstairs. Usually he'd come down and get it. He left it there for hours.
Yeah. It's good, isn't
That's
it?
That's good.
It's like, wow, you it's didn't miss good. It? I didn't say that, of course.
Right, right. But, and I think the best we can do is limit it, because I think our kids are going to want to connect via some social
sure.
media, and Snapchat's the name of the game right now. It'll be something else a year from now.
Yeah.
But if you can limit it, you know, to a brief period of time a day, oh, you see such a difference in kids.
Put the cell phone in the basket.
John, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Really appreciate it. That's Dr. John Duffy. The book is The Available Parent, or listen to his podcast on WGN+. We'll take a quick break and find out what Steve has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.